in the Parsha, we have the seven cows, the seven healthy, beautiful looking cows, and then you have the seven ugly cows. And the seven ugly cows in Paro's dream swallow up the seven beautiful cows. And I was thinking about that, and I was thinking how it's so true in life. Sometimes you have good times, and you have bad times. A lot of times you even have more good times than bad times. But you remember the bad times, for some reason, more than you remember the good times. And that's not our fault, that's just the way our brain's programmed, that naturally when you look back in your day and something really bad happened, it makes more of an impact. And that's the seven bad cows swallowing up the seven good cows. It's like the seven good cows didn't even happen. But maybe then our avoda in life is to constantly take those good cows and be in the moment and dwell on it and really try to enjoy the chasdei Hashem. And that's what brachas are about, saying slow brachas. That's what eating slowly is about. That's what Chanukah is about. It's about saying thank you to Hashem when everything's good, when you're healthy, when you can walk, when you can sing, when we're here in Eretz Yisrael. It's an amazing thing. So I give us all a bracha this Chanukah that we should be seven good cow yidden and to dwell on the good. They say it takes about something like 20 seconds or so until something goes into your long-term memory. When it's a good thing. When it's a bad thing, it goes right away. It's you remember it. But it's a good thing. You need to take time to really internalize it. So we should be blessed to sit at the candles and count all of our blessings. Also, just one halachic reminder on Shabbos Chanukah. It's important to remember to have longer candles. So if you don't have longer candles, just buy tea lights or the 24-hour ones. The longer, you can get them in the shuk for a shekel each. And that way, because you have to light a little earlier on Erev Shabbos, it'll last till the time when halachically the candles have to last. And also, I would advise, if possible, you can daven mincha ktana today at 12:04, because there's a shayla, how can I be lighting candles for the fourth night of Hanukkah and then going afterwards and davening mincha as if it's Friday? So, and also just to get, it's very often rushed when you're lighting Chanukah candles, you gotta do Mahu Sor, you gotta make Mincha, just creates a lot of, you gotta just have a Shabbat, you wanna take Shabbos early, so it creates a lot of chaos. So a lot of rabbis suggest on this Shabbos in particular to try to do a Mincha Tana, maybe you guys can make a minion. It's a really good idea. Okay, one Parsha thought as we're going to this very, very special Shabbos Chanukah. It's a very famous shayla. You'll hear lots of wonderful answers. I want to suggest an answer that I'm pretty sure most of us haven't heard yet. It's the question of why didn't Yosef write back to his brothers, to his father, more importantly than his brothers. You don't understand why he wouldn't write back to his brothers, but his father, he knew that his father was mourning him, or he knew that his father was yearning for him. And he knew that it's a terrible thing to be missing a child. So how could it be that Yosef, who rose to power, could forget about his father and cause him so much pain and not write back to him? If it seems like that would have been the reasonable thing to do. Yeah? Everyone here, the Kasha, I'm sure people have heard the question before. Many beautiful explanations. So this is actually, when I was in Shana Aleph, I saw an argument between Rav Yoel ben Nun and Rav Medan on this particular issue. You guys have a chance to see it inside. It's really, really cool. I'm not going to go through the whole debate. I'm just going to give you like a taster to whet your appetite so that you guys should look into the sugya yourself. Rav Yoel ben Nun has a radical theory. He posits that that Yosef thought that his father had abandoned him. And Yosef thought that his father was in on the conspiracy and wanted to out Yosef. He was the child who was kicked out of the brothers, just like in all the previous generations. There'd always been one child who was not part of the tradition. And he thought that, after all, his father had screamed at him. His father sent him down to Shechem. And he didn't know that the brothers told his father a lie. He thought his father just, you know, never reached out to him. So in his head, he thought that the connection was severed. And Rav Forman, in his Parsha videos, even brings a proof from the name of the children of Yosef. One of his children is named, because God has, I think I'm talking about Menashe, what's it called? Not Ephraim, Menashe, Kinashani Elokim, Be'eretz Onyei. Because God has made me forget the affliction from the land, from the land of my pain. In other words, he's trying to run away from the pain of his past. And he thinks he's having a new start, and he's no longer connected to the old 12 tribes. So that's Rav Forman's perspective and Rav Yoel Ben Nun. On a personal level, I have a very hard time with this theory. Anybody guess why I? What problem could there be with this this theory? Yeah. First of all, last week we were talking about Vayima and how he never lost a connection and the Dmut Yofna of Yaakov Nachon. So it just doesn't go well with that stream of thought.
And like I was looking about how much Yaakov loved Yosef more than others because of the Kana Pasim, and just, it doesn't really make sense that he would have felt like my father tried to kill me.
Exactly. And even if there was a 10% chance that he thought that maybe his father didn't want to kill him, wouldn't you reach out and ask just in case? So to me, it seems like a little bit of a wild conspiracy theory to say that Yosef really thought that Yaakov had sold him down the river and had wanted no connection. Yeah, I don't know. It's possible. But to me, that seems a little crazy.
Didn't Yosef send a signal to Yaakov? I don't remember the specific thing about the
year
they had about the Agalot.
The Agla Rufa. The first thing he sent him was Agalot. And that was to say that their connection was never severed. Very good. Yeah, that's another interesting source. So there's another famous theory, and that's the theory of the Ramban. He's the first one who really gets into this sugya, as far as I know. And he posits that really Yosef was trying to make the dreams come to fruition. He knew he had these dreams. He knew dreams were meant to be. Look at the story with Paro. And what he was trying to do once the brothers get down to Mitzrayim is maneuver them so that the brothers actually, all of them, come and bow to him. And that's what he's trying to do here. And this whole time he's waiting to have this dream, which was really a prophecy, happen. Make it happen. Now, there's a problem with that theory too. And a lot of Mefarshim criticize the Ramban's theory. What's the problem with the Ramban's theory that Yosef, what he's trying to do the whole time, was make his dreams happen?
Isn't that we're not supposed to force
Hashem's hand? Exactly. They say that's up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Very good. Reuven, you should come every day. Like, that's up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's the one who's supposed to make the prophecies happen. Why? It's not up to me necessarily to force them to happen. And especially if I'm going to cause pain to another person, how could Yosef do that? So they asked that Shaila on the Ramban. You could defend the Ramban's position. Yeah.
But how about like all the prophecies about like when Mashiach comes, and a lot of people pose that like, oh, Mashiach's going to come by us actually doing things rather than not like a building falling from the sky.
Yafet, Nachon, and Rav Soloveitchik in his five speeches goes down that. He compares himself to Yosef HaTzadik, who's trying to bring the redemption actively. And Ramban is really the father of religious Zionism. So it makes a lot of sense, l'shita to. And you definitely could make that argument that we have to make it happen. But on the other hand, to bring so much pain to his father for all these years, the question still stands. There's another theory, which I think is also very strong.
Can I ask one more thing?
Yeah.
Since he already had this incredible miracle, he went from the dungeon, to almost certain, death or just extinction to becoming the viceroy of the Pharaoh, isn't that proof enough that he doesn't need to force it?
Nachon, he saw the Yad Hashem. He saw that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was working through him. In fact, I think that's the essence of Chen. Chen of Hanukkah, Chen of Yosef, is that he just sees everything is flowing through him. Mm-hmm. Nothing's happening from him. It's all Biladai. It's all from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Mm-hmm. It's just for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Nachon, you're right. You could say that he saw the sign and he was just waiting to see as things toppled in their place. Nachon. The Abarbanel and others also suggest similarly. They try to explain every step in the story as a process of bringing tshuva, of getting the brothers to do tshuva. He wasn't trying to torture the brothers. He was trying to get them to do introspection. That's why he puts the stuff in his bag. He's trying to arouse them to do tshuva, and that's what he was waiting for. And I think that's also a very good theory. I heard a beautiful, beautiful explanation, which I think puts a lot of these answers together. It's actually in the name of the Tosfot Harid. The explanation is like this. When Yaakov sent Yosef on his mission, what was the original mission of Yosef HaTzadik? Why did Yaakov send Yosef down to do towards his brothers? To see that he was helping. What's the lesson the Torah uses? They wrote that Shalom Achicha, to see the peace of your brothers, to bring peace towards your brothers. Now, we generally understand that to mean check out how they're doing. But the way that my Rosh Hashiva explained it is that his mission in life was to bring peace to the Jewish people. That was Yosef's mission. That's the mission of Yosef HaTzadik. And that was a mission where he said, Hineini, which means I'll never give up. No matter what, I'm always going to be doing that mission. And Yosef HaTzadik, his whole life mission was to bring peace to the brothers. And that's why he didn't sin with Eshet Potiphar, because he needed to keep that connection, that Vayim HaEn connection. And if he knew if he severed the connection through sin, there would no longer be peace. And he also knew that what would happen if he would have written back to his dad at any point in the story, until the end of the story, and said, hey, dad, your children sold me down the river. What would then happen? Imagine that scenario. What would happen?
The dad and the brothers would be gone.
There would be a lot of pain and anger and frustration between the brothers. Right? There would never be between the brothers and the father. And even if Yosef would have said, no, it's all good. But if the brothers had not felt catharsis, if they had not done tshuva, then they wouldn't have been able to be in shalem with themselves, and they wouldn't have been able to really feel brotherly love towards Yosef HaTzadik. So Yosef had to wait and wait and maneuver this whole situation of tshuva, not stam because he was playing God to make his dreams happen or to make them do tshuva, to get them to be a better yidin, but because his mission in life was to bring brotherly connection to the tribes, and he needed to wait for the right time to do that. And the only way to really do that is to wait until they had done sincere tshuva, and they'd stepped up, they'd changed their ways, and then he could reveal himself, they could feel good about themselves, Yaakov could feel good about themselves, and Am Yisrael could be biyachad. In my opinion, that's really the mission of the Jewish people. In particular, our sect, the religious Zionist community, I think we're mamish in the middle. We have this amazing koach, where we can bring together different strands of Jewish people. We're open-minded, but we're also devout. We're fun, but we're also connected to our roots. And every person here is a special koach to bring together Yidden and to bring together the world and to be part of that Masorah of Yosef HaTzadik. Let's just end off with one gadol story, because I can't leave without a gadol story. So my Hanukkah present this year was Rav Shlomo Gorin picture book. It's really good. Highly recommend it. It has all sorts of pictures and fun stuff. And it's amazing. I read the real biography, but this is more fun. So, 40 seconds. So I want to tell you a story about Rav Shlomo Gorin. Rav Shlomo Gorin is the definition of someone who brought Am Yisrael together. In fact, he was the first chief rabbi of the army of Israel. And Ben-Gurion said, all right, you can make it kosher. And he said, absolutely not. I'm only going to make it kosher if it's kosher for everyone. The whole army has to be one. So I don't care if there's 5% religious people here. The whole army has to be kosher. The whole army has to keep Shabbos. There has to be complete unity here. And Ben-Gurion is like, okay, that makes sense. And that's why the army to this day is completely shomer halacha, meaning officially. Some individuals within it may not be, but the rules are somewhere else. I'll tell you one story, an amazing story of Gvura, of Hanukkah, of Maccabean Gvura. So Rav Gorin, in 1948, was the chief rabbi of the army and the chief rabbi of the army of Yerushalayim, but he only did that on condition that he could still do regular shifts. So he'd still do every night his hour shift watching over Yerushalayim. And in the Independence War, and rumor... It's not a rumor. The army got word that the Jordanians were going to go into Yerushalayim and kill everyone, essentially. And the army guys in panic. The next morning, on Saturday morning, was the planned attack. They got word that they're going to march in with their tanks. So it was Friday afternoon, and they said, so what? Rav Gorin said, okay, I'm here to help. I'm ready to do whatever you need. What do you want me to do? I said, you need to go to every yeshiva bacher, and you need to tell them to break Shabbos and to guard, dig tunnels underground at night, because we can't do it during the day, because the Jordanians will see us and shoot us. There are Jordanians all around. And you need to convince them to listen to you, you're a big rabbi, to break Shabbos to save the Jewish people. So Rav Gorin right away ran to every single yeshiva in Meir Sharim all over the place. This book doesn't tell it, but I read the biography. There's a lot of rabbis who were giving him a hard time and screaming at him and saying, no, you're with the Tzionim. Absolutely not. He wouldn't give in. He went from door to door, house to house, knocking. In the end, he convinced the yeshiva Bachram that it's Kulach Nefesh. He got hundreds of yeshiva guys to dig all night on Friday night, and he went on to his little guard post. He watched, you can even see the picture, and amazingly, miracle of miracles, there's 13 tanks. Each, the first three tanks just went, they didn't see the ditch, and they, all three Jordanian tanks crashed, and then the Jordanians said, what's going on here? And they retreated. And Yerushalayim was saved through the gvura of one man who Umamish believed in.
This is after they had already destroyed the Roka?
This is before. There's a whole different story. When it was destroyed, Rav Gorim was made a pact with Matagur that I'm going to be the first person to come back in 1967. This is in 48, and come back to Yerushalayim. And so it was. And Baruch Hu fulfilled their, his promise. So anyways, Bezrat Hashem, we should be Zocha with Mesiris Nefesh. The Sfarim say that when you're lighting the candles of Hanukkah, you should think about the Gevura of a Maccabee running to, like, running to go to battle. Like in Braveheart, Mamish. So we should be Zocha to, in our own way, to think about Mesiris Nefesh for Am Yisrael. And Hashem, an amazing Shabbos Chanukah.